Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is the new role-playing game system compatible with any setting and featuring the critically acclaimed narrative dice system. The experience begins with the core rulebook, which features an explanation of the narrative dice system and core mechanics of the game, an overview of five different settings in which to place campaigns, and advice for game masters to craft a myriad of adventures with unparalleled freedom.
Am I supposed to guess what this is for? based on kind of the purple prose in that Monty Cook's Tolus Kickstarter?
No, it's actually Genesis.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was kind of thinking that.
It's a little vague. Yeah, I should have at least hit their core fantasy setting or something. I should have put something in there. It's a little bit more of a hint. But so that's the basic pitch for Genesis when they first launched it. That's not the page on there, or the blurb on their page.
And again, radio did not transmit my wrinkled nose at that narrative dice system. That should have tipped me off.
It's critically acclaimed.
Okay. It's also critically canceled.
Right, exactly. And that's why I bring it up, because it's been independently confirmed. So there has been no official press release or anything
still
from Fantasy Flight that they will be discontinuing production of their role-playing game lines. This means we already know the RPG staff department was laid off. There was a rehire of a single editor that may be just handling putting everything to bed. So that will mean that the Starships and Speeders for their Star Wars role-playing game will still come out.
Okay.
But it's not going to have any support, as well as Secrets of the Crucible, the Keyforge campaign setting
working on the Keyforge RPG. Yeah.
And I think because from what I've heard about Fantasy Flight, I mean, they've got so many things kind of in the queue. Like they're got like 2,000 print jobs or production jobs going on in China at any one time. So to slow that machine down, to say, okay, we're done doing this, and actually it's going to take some time to kind of unwind and things that are already.
So what you're saying is stuff could still potentially come out for the Genesis system.
Yes.
The system's going to be kind of dead.
Right. It's not going to be supported. So that's really sad. And especially because it's only 2 years old, I think.
Really?
Yeah, 2017. Yeah. So I think, it's only been out like fully for a few years and people were getting excited. Alan, for example, really likes that system. It's a shame, but I guess as long as the system exists and it's setting agnostic, where you can play any type of setting, as long as they gave you good enough guidelines to create your own campaigns, it can live on.
I mean, look at the OSR.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, that rule system has been, air quote, dead. I mean, for how long? Four editions of D&D. So it's not, like, we say dead system to mean that nothing's being produced for it. And I do understand that a dead system kind of people are less enthusiastic about than a current system. But that doesn't mean you have to, like, stop playing Genesis or that the fans can't continue to support it. I mean, you want to talk about fan support. I think a lot of us fell off of Netrunner, the LCG, but the Nisei project is basically still going, a completely fan run where they are producing cards and still holding tournaments and still putting out like a most wanted list and not really all that interested in it. But the point is, fans can still continue this thing even if it is, quote, dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if it doesn't have official support. And I think we saw that with a lot of the Games Workshop games as well, like Gorka Morka, Mordheim, and they had new rule sets and people continued to make them even though you were scrounging to find models to use. Right.
No, we haven't seen come back? Inquisitor.
Ah, yes, that's true. And I don't think there's even a fan movement to bring that back. Yeah, so the speculation is, I think we mentioned before that Asmodee is kind of prepping Fantasy Flight games for sale, because that whole thing, Asmodee and everything, is owned by a French private equity firm, Eurazio. Which purchased Asmodee in 2013. So they're going to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff, make it look very profitable because they do have the Star Wars license and they do have a lot of valuable things.
Not anymore.
They can resell. You know, the games that are doing well for them and that are big connected to big IPs, that might make it a desirable thing to purchase. But that's a shame because it's done nothing for them. That acquisition has done nothing but canceled, and I think prematurely canceled, a lot of projects. And I've really been soured on Fantasy Flight. I don't like their with X-Wing, how they make it required purchases to get neutral cards in $50 box sets for ships you're not going to use, and there's a lot of shady things. And even like the you have to buy three core boxes
in a living
card game to like really be able to have the power of deck building.
You can have up to three copies of this in your deck, but we're only going to give you one for the starter box, and that's the only place you can get it. So enjoy these extraneous copies of all the other cards.
So a lot of extra cards floating around. So I've really been soured because they've discontinued a lot of projects that I was enjoying and excited about, and just, you know, no warning, and just sometimes they kind of finish it out, and sometimes they just leave it. They just, you know, cut it off and leave it. Like the 40K Warhammer 40K Conquest, it was the kind of a living Fantasy Flight, typical living card game. So packs were coming out monthly, and it just stopped. When they lost the license, it just stopped. So the game is in limbo. Yeah. So and the same thing with Netrunner. It leaves you
kind of disappointed.
Yeah, because, you know, wherever the meta kind of ended, that's it. And unless you're going to go back and create limited pools to, you know, which to build decks from and stuff, there's just not the interest in that. I think they did do all the factions, and they have gotten through, like, each faction was represented, but some were weaker than others. Some had less updates and less tweaking than others. So it doesn't really exist as a playable game in that way, unless you have something like the Nisei Project, where you're kind of tweaking it and kind of keeping it alive so that there is a changing living meta for gameplay.
You say that, and I agree with you. And we haven't played Netrunner since FFG lost the license and they kind of stopped making stuff. I think local metas could still adapt. You know, if you were playing that Conquest game, you'd be like, okay, look, Faction X isn't that strong, so your choice to play it, or you kind of find a way to take cards out of the other factions to so that things are kind of balanced. And so, but I do understand that there is less enthusiasm to play a quote dead game.
Right. So. That's not good. So I hope Fantasy Flight still exists. I mean, their production quality, when they're really supporting a game, they're supporting it well. Yep. They do, you know, good errata and good kind of balancing and things. But when they're not...
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing that just popped in my head that's now not being done. The L5R RPG.
Right. Yeah.
L5R, Star Wars, Genesis, Shadows of the Beanstalk, if they were going to do anything else with the Netrunner RPG.
Right. Yeah, they've got the Android settings. Yes, I hope that goes somewhere, and I hope someone does something with it. And hopefully it won't be Disney.
Oh, my goodness. I know where this is second to. Oh, my goodness. All right.
So, Avengers Assemble. There was an article posted, or a news item posted, that said Spider-Man and Captain America?
No, it was Spider-Man and Star-Lord.
Oh, that's right. Spider-Man and Star-Lord want to start an actual play of Dungeons & Dragons because I guess they're big fans. I don't know.
You know what? I don't doubt they are. Right. But yeah, they wanted to play or do some kind of live play of Dungeons & Dragons with the Avengers actors. And it's funny, the first place I saw this was the creator of Cortex Prime and Marvel Heroic Roleplaying very politely saying, I have a game suggestion. And of course, then I just saw that went off and was like, oh my God, they're literally anything other than Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah,
please.
Right.
Like, nothing against Dungeons & Dragons, except I have some stuff. But I'm just kind of, as anyone who follows me on social media knows, very tired of people defaulting to Dungeons & Dragons, irregardless of what they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying the Avengers actors don't enjoy playing D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at that and say, why?
Right.
And there were some really good answers about why. It's because, let's see, Hasbro owns D&D and all this kind of, you know, corporate stuff. And I'm like, okay, you're right. It still just kind of sucks.
You mean the synergy, the corporate synergy.
Yeah, that's what you call it. Synergy is for card games. Yeah.
See, that's what success of Critical Role. So something that started kind of as people in their living room or people around their dining room table doing this and becoming success, they're going to attract a lot of attention and a lot of copycats, and they're going to have so much money to throw at these things that it's going to dwarf. I mean, the production values of Critical Role are crazy.
Oh, yeah, they're
right
fantastic.
Now.
Yeah.
But they're going to be nothing compared to the, you know,
Disney-backed actual plays of whatever. Yeah.
It's gonna be crazy.
Yeah.
So actually, that's the thing. It probably is possible to get the entire Avengers cast together. You're just going to have them each sitting in individual green screen rooms.
Oh, you probably could, yeah.
Because there's no way that schedule-wise they're all going to be physically in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Just because with filming Endgame, I think that's basically what they had to do.
Oh, really?
Whenever they're free, it's the whole final battle is just a giant green screen. Yeah. And just you show up when you can and we'll just kind of match you in and do your parts.
Actually, that'd be kind of an interesting way to play a game. But yeah. Reading that, and again, seeing that they wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, which again, hey, if you like the game, fine. I had a bit more respect, but not much, for that announcement we talked about last week from that Stars thing where DC wanted to run an actual play of super DC fans, you know, and at least they were playing a game that wasn't Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, it was a game from the 80s, and I kind of looked at it and went, why would you want to play that? I don't know. Right. But still, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're actually going to kind of do a superhero-themed game that uses a superhero system. Imagine that. That's a mind-blowing concept. Not hacking D&D into doing something it wasn't designed to do. Yeah. Anyway. So let me tell you how I really feel. Anyway.
I do think if someone's got a name, even if it's a Freddie Prinze Jr., it's going to be enough to attract people out of just curiosity. Yep. But if they're legitimately fans of the game, you're going to see that in their play session, mm-hmm. like how much they enjoy it, how much they get into it. And it's not going to have that feel of voice actors that are like, oh, this will be fun and it'll add something to my, you know, my voice reel, you know, because I'll do this really cool character. And people that are kind of dispassionately doing things just because, wow, this is getting a lot of attention, so I guess we should keep at it. I'm always more attracted to actual plays where people, maybe they're not making it entertaining, and for someone that doesn't know the game, it might not be that interesting, but I really like to see the passion and the enjoyment of people in the session, especially people that have been playing together for a long time. Mm-hmm. Not that's like, oh, you're from College Humor? Yeah, you do funny characters. Come on, play a character in our session. Like,
no, I absolutely agree, and I should clarify where I do not doubt that the people who are suggesting kind of getting these things together, I don't doubt they're fans of D&D. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying you're not a real fan.
Right, right.
What I'm kind of side-eyeing is what feels like the corporate involvement.
Yes.
Which, yeah. I don't know, that to me seems like it would drain some of the passion, or at least drains my interest in it, you know, see kind of like corporate sponsors all over this thing. And
right.
I don't know where the intersection of like games played for enjoyment that still have a budget that are sponsored by people kind of is. I phrase that very poorly, but I think this is a natural progression of tabletop RPG actual play streams. I just kind of don't know where it's going to go, and kind of worry that it's all going to become corporate and commercialized, and that doesn't really appeal to me all that much.
But come on, you're dying to play Chris Pratt's campaign setting, right?
Oh, man. Especially since he's on the list of bad Chris's anyway. Well, any of the, like, Hemsworth, Pine, all the other ones. Okay, fine. Maybe Star-Lord doesn't have to be in that Avengers game,
Well, speaking of Critical Role, you have been watching the one-shot that they did for Monster Hearts 2.
Yes, I did. We talked about this, I think, like last week or before, how, I was really kind of surprised that Critical Role was doing a Monster Hearts 2 actual play. It's kind of apprehensive to see what they did with it. I'm not finished watching. It's 4.5 hours.
Right.
And I've been having to like listen to it in like 10-minute chunks at worker. So I'm still not done. I have like an hour left. And I have feelings about it. And you know what they are if you've been following me on Twitter. But I'll say this. They're not all bad feelings. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great that Critical Role did this, since I was one of the people who was kind of side-eyeing them, saying, you know, you could be using your voice to play a not corporately produced game, to be doing other stuff. So the fact that they did this is great. The fact that they introduced Monster Hearts 2, one of my like favorite games, to an audience of like something like 800,000 people is great. The production values, as we said, were awesome. I found an awesome way to do strings based on what they did.
Yes,
poker chips with the sort of an icon representing the skin from the player color-coded. That was great, but you could only see if you were watching the string.
Yes.
The players were great at portraying their characters, and the MC, Matthew Mercer, was great at like improvising situations and kind of setting tone. What you said about it not really being to your taste is what I felt watching this. There's stuff it would have done a lot differently, and it seems to be Critical Role's thing, where the GM or MC narrates a lot more for the player characters than I would feel comfortable doing, to the point of like dictating actions, emotions, kind of like reactions. And I get that it makes good entertainment, but I think I watch an actual play to get a sense for the rules, generally speaking.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of rolling. And like you said, I think it was first hour and
10 minutes, or like that's where you got to get to
see a,
to see a roll. And like I counted at least like 7-8 times where what a player said probably should have triggered a move.
Yeah.
And there was a really good discussion, and everyone was pretty polite, I thought, about, yes, everyone at the table was learning to play that game. So you do have to cut them some slack about how they handle the rules.
Right.
I think that also intersects with Critical Role has kind of positioned itself, or has been positioned as an ambassador to the TTRPG hobby, and are kind of like held up as an example of how to run games. So I do not think it is unfair to say they felt kind of unprepared, and I would have loved to see kind of a better grasp of the rules than what I think got presented.
It seems like they default towards not showing a lot of rolling and, you know, having all the players be in costume. It feels like a LARP to me.
It does.
And even the character art is exactly what the characters are wearing in the session. Like, that's elaborate. And I know WotC, like the D&D YouTube channel, defaults to that. There's some actual play where people are in, you know, elf ears and horns and costumes and things. And that, I mean, that is a style of it, but that's a barrier to entry. You know,
that's how I feel too.
So I don't think people should really, I mean, if that's part of the fun, if putting together your costume is part of the fun and how you show up to the session to, you know, make people enjoy the immersion or whatever, that's fine. But if you want to get new people into the hobby, it's like, oh, I got to sew a jerkin.
That is in the back of my mind. As someone who custom ordered a Weyland-Yutani shirt to wear to run an aliens game, I am aware that it is fun and people derive entertainment from dressing in character, or at least kind of like dressing up to run or participate in a game. So I'm absolutely not saying do not do that. But I also am, just like you, looking at that and thinking, okay, if this is kind of meant to draw new people into the hobby, or if it's one of the biggest ways that people are getting into the hobby, do these new people think that costumes are part of the experience? Because they are not. They're something you can do, but you don't have to. I also kind of wonder if we've talked before about, hey, are like voices. Is doing voices something that new people think they have to do?
Right. No, I think that was very daunting when I ran 5e for my daughter and her boyfriend. They were like, do we need to do voices? So my daughter was her character is very quiet and enigmatic because she didn't want to feel the pressure to do a voice every time she said something. No, I think that is it gives people one version of things. And hopefully they look around a little bit and kind of see what else there is to offer. Because I think the most interesting part of role-playing is someone's just wearing the clothes that they wore to work and they're sitting at the table and they're having a drink. And then they have a moment in an interaction with a character that you are actually in that story, in that setting with them. And you didn't need lighting and anything, prosthetics on their face to really get into what they were doing or what's happening in that scene.
Yeah, to me, it sounds not great, but it seems a little silly to dress up. And I don't know, maybe I'm kind of reacting poorly to, like, okay, I didn't play during the 80s because I was just born, but like the whole stigma of, oh, do you wear a cape to play your wizard in D&D? That never really got pushed on me, but like I know that's there, and so maybe that's why I'm kind of reacting poorly to the, but everyone's dressing up now. Why?
Right. I thought we moved beyond that.
Still thinking, like, first time I told my wife I play these types of games, she's like, do you wear a cape? I'm like, no, I don't wear a cape. You don't have to do that.
So any updates on Ironsworn? Have you gotten any time
I've ordered the books.
Oh, that's right.
I've ordered physical copies of the books. That is about all I've done because I've been too busy watching that Critical Role live stream.
And what was the new volume that they
called? So the original book is Ironsworn, and the recently released kind of addition to that is called Delve. And it's a pretty hefty book that introduces, well, going into dungeons and adapts kind of dungeon crawling and exploring ruins and stuff like that to the Ironsworn system or mode of play. So again, you're going to have like solo play, co-op play, and group play. Where you want to play by yourself, friends, with a friend, without a GM, or kind of like the traditional, someone's going to GM this session.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you'll have to let us know. And actually, maybe we should video just a look through of the books.
That would be great. Wait 5 to 7 weeks because I did not pay for expedited shipping. It was $6 to get like 5 to 7 weeks, or $30 for 2 to 6.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I guess it's 5 to 7 then.
But surprisingly, things come a little bit faster than those estimates to Japan. Yeah, because once they hit Japan, they're at your door. Yeah, it's so fast.
So how about you? What have you been doing?
I had a very weird late night experience.
Okay.
Check my email right before bed. This is like, you know, around 1 a.m. I get an email from Prince August.
Okay.
And it's one of those things that I should have just ignored. But I clicked on the link and I said, why not? Let's see what's going on here. And so for anybody that doesn't know, Prince August is an online retailer that mostly deals with casting your own like a kind of Napoleonic soldiers. And so they teach you how to, you know.
Oh, interesting.
The bars of pewter, I guess. Okay. Yeah, whatever the white metal is. You know, so they're about making, you know, kind of very old school, like 60s, you know, style, 50s, 60s style wargaming. But... they ended up purchasing the overstock or kind of leftover inventory from Heartbreaker.
Oh, wow.
Of all of the Chronopia and Warzone miniatures. Yes.
And they knew exactly who to hit up, didn't they? They did.
Yes, they looked at my order record and they said, wait a minute. So they have some prototypes that they found in their warehouse that were part of what they bought from Heartbreaker, and they're just resin casts of terrain.
Cool.
Yeah, so all of these like interesting terrain pieces from both things that supported their fantasy setting, but also specifically Warzone.
Cool.
It was just limited, like they just found a few random pieces and put them online, so they were selling out incredibly fast. And so I just spent the night putting things in my cart, and they should be here, and I'm really curious to see, and especially because these are the test castings of sculpts that they did for a whole series of terrain that just never happened because everything kind of fell apart for Warzone and
Chronopia.
Yeah, and Target Games, I guess. So I just purchased a bunch of that nonsense, and I can't wait to see. And it's going to be great with the Chronopia and with the Warzone.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I'm hearing now is we got to play Warzone.
Yeah, right. So yeah, unfortunately, there was a really great piece that it seems like they probably only had one of, because I was probably the only crazy person that clicked on that email as soon as it came. But it was like a stone stairwell and a landing, and all along the kind of stone face were the icons of the corporations from
that's
Warzone.
Cool.
It was really cool, but yeah, I think it sold out pretty quick. And there was probably only one, but yeah, that was the one of the most tempting items. But I've got a lot of like Dark Legion hallways and corners and things, and yeah, so it's there are some great pieces there, and yeah, unfortunately that's what I spent my night doing.
So again, what I'm hearing is we're gonna have to rewatch that movie.
Yeah, no.
Which is not good.
Yes.
And then play the game.
Yes. Yeah, we've got the starter set for Warzone.
Yeah, we do.
We have to try that out. And now we'll have things to put in the way.
Yeah, cool.
They were actually sculpted by Heartbreaker. So they sold out of all the Chronopia stock, but they still, if you are interested in the old Heartbreaker sculpts of the Warzone miniatures, the white metal miniatures, there's a lot of them. Some of them are in Ziploc bags, but a lot of them are still on blister cards.
Oh, cool.
So they did just buy their remaining stock. So that's Prince August. I'll put a link in the description. And you can still get, I don't think you can get the Warzone starter set anymore, but you may be able to get Blood Berets, and at least the books from the starter set are still available separately. One thing I wanted to mention is that Free League Publishing just announced their community content program.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's Free League Workshop on the storefront of DriveThruRPG. It allows fans to post content developed for any of their games. And so this is very similar to the DM's Guild or White Wolf Storyteller's Vault or Chaosium's Miskatonic Repository. Right. This supports Tales from the Loop, Mutant Year Zero, Coriolis, Forbidden Lands, and Zimbaroon.
What I'm hearing is not Alien.
No, not Alien so far. So just the original IPs, I think. So maybe the license for Alien doesn't allow them.
That's
to
what
do
I'm guessing.
Them. Because they're doing a 50-50 split of sale price. How is that compared to other places?
For DriveThruRPG, it's standard.
Okay.
For other places, it's terrible.
Right. So they're taking a chunk, but hopefully that it'll get in front of more people's noses. And if it has, if they approve it for their shop or whatever, then it maybe gives more legitimacy.
Again, I kind of have feelings on the DM's Guild and these storefront things compared to other independent places like Itch and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The upside is, they're letting you use their IP and they're giving you a real big audience.
Yes.
For 50% of whatever you make.
Mm-hmm.
Which my feeling is not great, as opposed to like Itch, where it's taking like 15.
Wow, yeah.
Like, downside there is obviously you have no IP to work with, and it's just your own original content, and it's still not that well known. So kind of pick your poison.
And we also know that they're doing an open license for the Year Zero engine. So this will also, let people adapt that D6 die pool system to maybe do original things as well. So, but I guess this workshop basically is for supporting their existing original IPs. Speaking of Alien and Free League, they did also announce that they have 7 licensing deals with foreign language companies.
Oh, cool.
So they're going to produce the Alien RPG in German, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, Russian, and Polish. And they all have local publishers that they're going to work with. So the first one that's going to be out in June will be the French French version. So that's great. Hopefully that gets more people interested in and more support for that game, because, we had a lot of fun with it, and it'll be nice to see people in other countries enjoying that same
People
thing.
Are also on Twitter telling me, hey, stop bashing D&D and tell us about games you do like. And
right. Yes.
And I'm like, I don't have any more Alien content.
What about anything on Kickstarter that you wanted to mention?
Trophy Gold has been wildly overfunded and has hit its stretch goal where, I'll be part of that Trophy Gold mega dungeon writing.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, the only thing I have on Kickstarter is they're unionizing.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. I saw that too.
When this had first started, when this kind of move had first started with the employees, I loved the CEO's statement was, that dynamic doesn't reflect who we are as a company, how we interact, how we make decisions, and where we need to go. We believe that in many ways, this would set us back, and it will be an us versus them binary.
How did that age? Yeah.
And immediately, you know, revoked that statement and said, we support and respect the decision of this fair and democratic process.
Of course they did. Yeah.
So I think a lot of these companies, a lot of these technology companies that are kind of going, you know, like Uber or whatever, you know, all these companies that are going into this new territory and trying to establish these new things, they're doing it, or even like Patreon,
right.
They're doing it with these lofty intentions. And the way that they're talking sounds like it's outside of capitalism. It's in this untouchable bubble of goodwill and everybody working together. And then the hard reality hits of, yeah, we do need to unionize because we're being abused, and and Kickstarter is making insane amounts of money that are not benefiting us in any way. And we need dental insurance, and we need 401ks and all that good stuff like real employees have. I think that wears out pretty fast with a lot of these companies.
I hope other companies or similar products adapt. Mm-hmm. And by adapt, I mean adapt the union rules.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rather than like adapt and find other ways to screw their employees. That's not what I meant.
Yeah. Well, because I would love to see the death of the gig economy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yes. Because I think that it's just leaving like most Americans under 40 years old uninsured, you know? Yeah, completely uninsured. But so this is in the tech industry, this is the very first unionization, the very first movement. So we'll see how this goes, whether this spreads or whether it's immediately quashed. And if if the mafia gets involved and starts union breaking at TechCrunch. Wow. Yeah. BuzzFeed and Vox will start having mafia intervention. Yeah, so I thought that was good news, interesting news. I'm curious to see what's going to happen. And I think that means for a lot of these companies, the kind of gold rush or the
honeymoon period.
Yeah, the honeymoon period is definitely over. I think it's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's there need to be real companies now.
Put on your big company pants.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, where it's HiveMind, HiveMynd, or just look for the massive threads that are nothing but GIFs.
Nice.
How about you?
And I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon. So that's abusecartoons.com. And the live stream is on Twitch and YouTube at Abuse Cartoons, on Twitter at Abuse Cartoons, and then also the archive of all the cartoons for the past too many years.
That's a good way to put it.
gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website. Please subscribe to our podcast and get weekly, interesting, wonderful updates, as well as our longer form podcasts that are in-depth reviews or discussions. And if you would like to follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter, so YouTube and Twitch. And then if you want to support the podcast, please consider becoming a patron on patreon.com/idleredhands. So that's it for this week.
Yeah. Later, mortals.
Bye. Out of